Well, it's Labor Day in the United States. We've celebrated this holiday in America since the late 19th century. We set aside this day to honor the contributions of workers to our economic success here in the United States. The holiday was started by unions to emphasize the importance of organized labor. But in 2016, just how important are unions? How much influence do they have? Their numbers and political power have waned significantly over the last 50 years. This hour, we're going to do something we do every Labor Day on the Joy Cardin Show, and that is talk about the state of organized labor and its future here in Wisconsin as well as across the nation. So what's your assessment of the state of organized labor in Wisconsin? If you're in a labor union, what's going well or not so well from your perspective? And which presidential candidate do you think would be best for organized labor? 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org, or you can post to the Joy Cardin Show Facebook page. My guest this morning is Stephanie Bloomingdale, Secretary-Treasurer of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. Stephanie, welcome to the Joy Cardin Show.
Good morning, John, and happy Labor Day to you.
Well, happy Labor Day to you as well. I see we're both working.
That's right.
I was very nearly born on Labor Day, so it would have really been Labor Day for my mother. I'm just going to stop right there. What is your Labor Day message for organized labor?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say happy Labor Day to everyone out there. And really, we take this moment and this day to pause and remember the accomplishments of the American labor movement. And I encourage your viewers to go out and join one of our many events that are taking place across the state, Labor Day parades and picnics and festivities around the state. And I will be at the Milwaukee Labor Parade with my two kids and my husband, and we're really looking forward to that. And so I may see some of you out there. But for those of you who are not joining one of our events and are celebrating with barbecues and bratwurst and beer, take a moment really to think about what the American labor movement has brought to you and your families. And these are the men and women that came before us that came together and stuck together and organized and fought for better wages, better working conditions, and a better life for themselves and their families. And those gains that were made on the shop floor and in the contract, in collective bargaining agreements, then were translated into state and federal law. And so those laws that were brought to bear are laws, and they are laws that can be changed. And people have to understand that the 40-hour work week, the weekend, workers' comp, overtime protections, vacation or sick leave if you have it, these are not things that are guaranteed in any way. They're not set in stone, and they can change. And that's why it's so important that people understand that they have to be active, not only in elections, which are very important, and especially this year, because the people that we elect, the politicians that we elect up and down the ticket, will have the say over what kind of protections we have at the workplace. And so it's so important that people know where the presidential candidates stand, where their U.S. federal candidates stand, and all the way down to the state assembly and state senate. Where do those folks stand on issues like raising wages? Where do they stand on collective bargaining rights and the right for people to organize into a union? So we know that with unions comes better wages and working conditions. And there was just a study not too long ago. The Bureau of Labor Statistics showed us that if you have a union job, you're going to make an average of $200 a week more than workers without a union. And so that's on average a 27% higher per hour wage. Mm-hmm. So we know that union work and people coming together and sticking together and saying, you know, we're worth more on the job in terms of wages and working conditions, really lifts not only themselves and their families, but whole communities. So on this Labor Day, I want to just invite all of us to remember the gains that we've made and the gains that are still to come. We know that there are still plenty of problems out there. To cite a few, we have wage theft that is rampant in many industries. And we also have uncertain work hours, which means that many people are not guaranteed a set number of hours. It's kind of like the gig economy out here. But really, in many industries, this is the sad truth about a worker's life. So she may be called off. She may be scheduled for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to be called off only to be called back on Saturday and Sunday. And so these are things that we need to continue to work to protect American families and the workers in these industries.
What would you say is the biggest challenge facing organized labor today?
The biggest challenge facing organized labor is really maintaining this idea that these rights that we have are not set in stone and that they require work and effort. And that means that to all members within unions, that it's important that they work to keep their own union strong. And to workers out there without a union, you know, we really need to understand how important their idea is to get involved in a union, to start a union if they don't have one, and to support unions when they can. And really, if unions are for everyone, whether you work behind a screw cutting lathe or in front of a kindergarten classroom, you belong in a union. And if you go to work and swing the boom of a crane or the handle of a mop, you belong in a union. And if you wear a hard hat or a hairnet, we will make a place for you in the House of Labor. And so organizing is incredibly important.
So what would you say, let's move to the political part of this. You alluded to this earlier. We're in the thick of a very contentious presidential campaign. Your national counterpart, Liz Shuler, spoke last week at the state AFL-CIO's Unity Conference, and she said that women's issues are labor issues and that organized labor can help Hillary Clinton get elected. First off, talk about what she meant when she said that women's issues are labor issues.
Well, labor issues are all people's issues for sure, and we know that when women join unions that their wages go up disproportionately to the whole, as do African Americans and Latinos who join unions. Their wages are going to go up even more rapidly than sort of the general public. So women's issues are union issues, and we need to make sure that all women are paid an equal wage. We have, unfortunately, in this country, women are only paid 78 cents to the dollar. That needs to change. That's not right, and that's something that we in the labor movement are working hard to correct. In terms of what's at stake with this election, we need to make sure that we do not elect Donald Trump. Donald Trump does not support working people, full stop. Donald Trump has over and over said, wages are too high. He supports right to work. He refuses to negotiate with his Las Vegas workers. And if that isn't enough for people to understand that when he makes his own products, you know, the ties and the shirts and the paraphernalia that he makes, he doesn't make it here on American soil. He's making those ties in Honduras and Bangladesh and China. So full stop, Donald Trump does not support working people, and we know that working people in Wisconsin are not going to be fooled.
Well, we'll talk more about Mr. Trump in just a little bit, but first, how are unions going to help Clinton win this November?
Well, Hillary Clinton has said repeatedly, when unions are strong, America is strong. And we know that she supports the right to organize, the right to collectively bargain, the right for workers to have better wages in their workplaces and safe workplaces. So we are doing everything that we can with the AFL-CIO in Wisconsin to elect Hillary Clinton, and also Russ Feingold, and also senators and assembly people who support working people all throughout the state. We have a robust plan where we are out on the doors talking to members and the general public at doorsteps, knocking on doors. We are making phone calls, and we are talking to each other in the workplace. So we have a multi-pronged plan that is very robust, as I say, and has started, several months ago and is continuing to grow.
Let's take a phone call here. Ed is with us in West Allis. Ed, hello. Thanks for joining the Joy Cardine Show.
Yeah, I'm one of the listeners this morning, and I wish that a lot of the things that our Secretary-Treasurer is stating were actually occurring. The state of organized labor, especially in the state of Wisconsin in 2016, is in a state of disrepair and chaos. We had a situation in Sherman Park nearly 3 weeks ago where the onus should have been on Mr. Walker continuously for the lack of providing the 250,000 jobs that were promised during the 2010 campaign. We should be at his doorstep at the mansion with retirees and workers picketing constantly. He should go nowhere in this state where he does not see someone from organized labor in his face. We are a right-to-work state now. And I dread to think what's going to happen up in the state Supreme Court in a few months with that particular lawsuit. And then today, symbolically, Mr. Clinton came here in 1996. Mr. Obama came to Labor Fest in 2008 and 2014. Hillary Clinton can't be at the largest Labor Fest in the nation on September 5th, 2016. That says to me that there is no organization, either on the side of Ms. Clinton or on the part of the state AFL-CIO and the Milwaukee County Labor Council. Ms. Clinton should have been here today, and she's not. And that's sending a message to me that there is chaos coming in the next 2 months of this campaign.
Ed, thanks. Thanks so much for the call, Stephanie.
What was his name? Jerry.
Ed.
Oh, I thought that was Jerry.
No, it was Ed. Well, at least that's what it said on my screen. I don't know. People can say whatever name they want when they call in, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, it is clear that we have significant problems here in Wisconsin. We all remember that Scott Walker implemented, one of his first things that he did was implement Act 10 that took away collective bargaining from public sector workers, and then just a couple of years ago implemented right to work and a tax on prevailing wage. It is clear that we have one attack after the next after organized labor in Wisconsin. And the one thing that is true is that we're not giving up, and that we have a strong resolve to continue to fight back against these attacks, to continue to mobilize our members, and to continue to work in the political field to change around those who set the laws to reverse Act 10 and to reverse right to work. And so clearly there is a lot of work ahead of us, but in order to understand how important our work is ahead of us is to understand what we have now, what's important to preserve, and what we need to do to get where we need to go.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more presidential politics and other issues surrounding labor as the Joy Cardine Show continues here on this Labor Day. Our conversation with Stephanie Bloomingdale of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO about the state of organized labor in Wisconsin will continue in just a moment. What do you make of the direction unions have taken in the past year? Which presidential candidate do you think would be the best for organized labor? 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the state of organized labor in 2016 with the Secretary-Treasurer of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO, Stephanie Bloomingdale. 800-642-1234 is our number. How do you feel about the state of your labor union, and what is it you think unions need to do most right now? You can call us at 800-642-1234, send an email to talk at WPR.org, or you can post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Three great ways to get in touch on this Labor Day. Stephanie, AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka said last week in Washington that he strongly supports Hillary Clinton this fall. So why is Clinton the choice of union leadership and not one of the other candidates, including a number of third-party candidates who've made, a lot of noise in the news media in this campaign?
Well, we have gone through a democratic process, and our members have clearly signaled that they support Hillary Clinton. And the reason that we support Hillary Clinton is because, again, what she says about when unions are strong, America is strong. She understands our core mission, which is to improve the lives of working people, to economically stimulate our economy in ways that help our communities, that help families, that help educate our children. And she is the best candidate for president for many, many reasons. But really, when you get down to it, we need somebody who's going to be looking after the interests of working people, people who get up and go to work every day, not just those at the top, the 1% that already have, enough and set so much of the economic policy. So we need to make sure that we have a candidate like Hillary that's going to do the best for working people in terms of wages and economic situations.
We mentioned Donald Trump earlier, and I said we would bring him up again and talk about his candidacy a little bit more. Donald Trump has made it clear over and over again that he opposes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He's called NAFTA the worst trade deal in U.S. history and says America is losing on trade. Now, those sound like pretty pro-union positions. Clinton, on the other hand, has been accused of flip-flopping on the TPP. Doesn't Trump earn some points with you on the trade issue?
Well, as you said, Hillary has come out, and she has said most recently that she is going to oppose the TPP, and that is something that we are very much in agreement with her on, that the TPP, as you know, will be another job killer just like NAFTA was. And it is so important that we make sure that any kind of trade agreements around the world, and we understand that trade agreements have to happen, but they need to be fair. And they need to be fair for workers, because we don't need to pit Bangladeshi workers against American workers in terms of how the work gets done. We need to level the playing field. And in terms of what we believe is that any trade agreement should make sure that workers in the other country have the full and free ability to organize and come together and join together in a union. That should be basic in any trade agreement that's out there.
Mm-hmm. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, the number to call. Let's take a phone call here from Bob, who joins us from Stevens Point. Bob, hello. Welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
I find the guest blaming Walker for the demise or the decline of people belonging to unions. It seems to me that in order for union to decline, somebody has to get out and leave the union. Now, for example, what's the percentage of people that have left the teachers' unions? And by the way, people have to belong to three unions, not just to one when they belong to a teachers' union. But why do you think they left if they weren't dissatisfied? And I'll hang up.
Bob, thanks for the call. Stephanie, I'm not quite sure what that last bit was about teachers having to be in three unions, but why don't you respond to what he had to say?
Well, what he said, first of all, that is, why am I blaming Scott Walker? And, we can start by blaming Scott Walker from before he even got into office in 2010 for refusing the money to build the high-speed rail train between Milwaukee and Madison, which would have created so many good-paying jobs and created the infrastructure to get our economy going in Wisconsin. And we know that we're really lagging in our economy around the Midwest, and that is fully squarely on the to blame of Governor Scott Walker. In terms of what has happened with union membership here in Wisconsin, we know that Scott Walker, along with his funders, the Koch brothers and others, and famously Diane Hendricks, the richest woman in Wisconsin, went out of their way to dismantle the structure of collective bargaining for public sector workers. Now, it is clear that that has have an effect, has had an effect on all of us. And to be clear, we are working so hard and every day to restore those rights for all people, because we believe that it is the best case for students, for us who receive the services of public services, to make sure that those people in those positions have the right to speak out about safety issues, have the right to speak out for good working conditions for not only themselves, but for the people that they serve.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. According to the State Department of Workforce Development, unemployment rates fell in July in all metro areas when compared to July of last year. And it also showed that rates went down or stayed the same in all 72 counties from June to July. To what do you attribute this drop in unemployment in Wisconsin?
Well, the real question is, unemployment going down is good, and we need to make sure that these jobs that are created are good jobs. The problem is with these numbers that a lot of people that have long-term job seekers are dropped off these numbers. And so we're not getting a real clear picture of what is happening with unemployment in our state. Also, we're not knowing what kind of jobs people have. And to have to work one job, two jobs, three jobs, more than full-time, and to still live in poverty should not exist for anyone in Wisconsin. And we need to make sure that we change that around. So we need to make sure that these jobs are good jobs and have good pay and benefits. So it's not just looking at the numbers, but looking at the overall picture.
There was also some good news from the DWD for manufacturing jobs. Wisconsin was 13th in the nation for rate of manufacturing job growth in the past year. What do you think's going on here?
Again, we need to look at what kind of manufacturing jobs are created here. The fact that manufacturing is coming back in Wisconsin is very, very good. We want to make sure that we're making things again here in Wisconsin and making things again here in America. In fact, we have on our website, the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, a portion there that is dedicated to listing out Wisconsin-made goods. So if you want a washing machine, you're going to want to make sure that that washing machine is made in Wisconsin by United Steelworkers. If you are buying a lawnmower, you're going to want to make sure that lawnmower is made by John Deere and made by machinists. So it is important that we see the economy as circular, and that if we buy the goods and services that are made by our neighbors, then all of us are better off.
We have some more callers that want to join us. Jim is with us in the Madison area. Jim, hello.
Good morning. I've been a member of a couple different unions over the course of my working life, and not once was I ever given any kind of an education as far as why labor unions were absolutely essential to human existence and to the balance of power between management and labor. And it would seem to me that one of the most important things that could be done is to have every single new man on the, or woman on the job sit down at a course before his first day on the or her first day on the job, and have be taught a course in why unions exist. I mean, people in the labor union, people in union work, don't really know why it's important that there is a union. They have no clue, most of them. So I'd like to hear your comments. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Stephanie?
Well, Jim, I think that's a great idea, and it seems to me that you do know a whole lot about why unions matter. So the fact that you're talking about the balance between workers and management and how that balance can be restored through people coming together through their unions is a key element of what it means to be why unions are important. And when you bring up the idea of education, I fully support that idea, and it is so important that people understand the basic idea of why unions are essential to a balanced economy.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's have Carl next from Madison. Carl, go ahead.
All right, thanks for taking my call, and happy Labor Day. I am a member of AFT Local 3220. That's the UW Madison Teaching Assistants Association. We are the local that kicked off the Wisconsin Uprising in 2011. And I come from a union family. And I just, you know, organized labor in Wisconsin is facing a really hard time. And I think there are three key points that we need to be doing to rebuild labor in the state. Number one is organizing the unorganized. We need to redirect funds away from funding the campaigns of corporate Democrats that just turn around and stab us in the back and throw everything we have into getting new members and organizing sectors we're not in yet. Number two, we need to reinvest in union democracy and make sure everyone feels like they have a voice in their union, whether they are just a worker on the job, a steward, all the way up to the level of leadership. That means that if leadership gets salaries, they should be no more than the average workers, to not separate them from people they represent, and that we need to be discounting dues for locals like mine that are decertified because of Act 10, but still fighting on the ground for the rights of our workers. And then number three, and finally, we need to be taking direct action in the workplace. We lost the battle on Act 10 because we unfortunately invested our energy in the recall process rather than where we have the ability to win, which it would have been in a general strike. And I'm not saying striking is easy. I'm not saying it's fun. But we need to revive the strike as the only tool we have to rebalance that power between management and labor, as you've been talking about here. So those are my comments, and I'd be happy to listen to your response off the air.
All right, Carl, thanks for the call. Stephanie?
Well, it really is good to hear from you, Carl, and how involved and engaged you are in your own union, which is the TAA, Teaching Assistants, over at Madison. You guys have been doing a great job and so important to our overall labor movement. And appreciate the work that you did during the 2011 fight for public sector workers and the important work that you did there. Your first point is very important, in that we have to make sure that we are spending the time focusing on organizing new members into the union, because our power comes from our numbers. And when we have more numbers, we have more power in the workplace. And so I agree with that completely. And reinvesting in union democracy, and Carl, you're involved with your union and doing that, and that is very important. And by the way, unions are the most democratic institution in the country. Bar none, that is a fact. So it is so important for people that are in their unions to take more ownership, to learn about union issues like Jim talked about in the last call. That is essential for creating healthy and vibrant and strong unions. In terms of discounting dues, that's something that is a local issue and an issue that, again, is taking place democratically within people's own unions. So, Carl, I would suggest that you work with your fellow unions to see if you can discount your dues. In terms of direct action and general strikes have been a tool. Withholding labor is a key element of workers' power and has been used really throughout time. In terms of how and when to use that, again, it goes back to the democratic nature of unions. And it is an important tool that we have in our toolbox to gain power. And it also is democratically used. So that means that if people want to go on strike and people agree to go on strike, then they do. So thanks so much for the call.
We had a commenter on Facebook, Brandy, who writes, "Unions became too large and political and have lost the confidence of the people. Politicians and the 1% have exploited that, and now we, the people, have lost. We have no one to fight for fair wages, family time, or benefits now, and it's clearly evidenced by the rapid decline of such things."
Well, Brandy, I would say, you know, it's true. As goes unions, goes the middle class. And the decline of workers has hurt all workers. We know this from a study that was just produced. It was authored by Washington University sociologists. And talk about the steep decline in union membership has had an outsized effect on the American workforce and has driven down wages. So we know that when workers lose power in their workplaces, wages drop. So the solution is for workers to gain more power. And we certainly won't give up on that idea or that ability or that notion that workers need to come together and to rebuild their unions, because everyone is going to benefit from strong organized labor, from strong workers coming together, having each other's backs, supporting each other in the workplace.
Brandy, thanks for your comment on Facebook. Let's go back to the phones quickly, and we'll take a call from Randy in Keewascom. Randy, hello. Thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardine Show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I guess my first question is, what does your guest make out of, you know, the union dues of the people that belong to the union? Over the years, I've gotten screwed by unions. I really have no use for them. They got too big, too powerful, and all they protect is the dead weight. When I was farming, I spent half a day getting jacked around by a unionista that laughed when the part that was supposed to be there wasn't, and I had to wait 3 hours just to find out it wasn't there. It was a big joke. None other than FDR said public unions should not be, because it's not in the best interest of the country. And considering the calls I've had to make to government agencies in Madison, all I get is non-answers and snarkiness. And, I got to go through about three idiots before I get to somebody that knows what they're talking about.
Randy, thanks for the call. I'm not entirely sure what Randy's point was, but he doesn't see unions as a benefit.
Well, he's saying that he knows a lot of idiots, so you have to know that. If, you know, he basically sounds like he thinks that wages are too high. Sounds kind of to me like Donald Trump, because if he thinks that wages are too high, then he hasn't looked around at what's going on in our communities. We know that the facts are there, that when people can come together, can stick together, can support each other in their unions, then they can do better as a whole, and our communities are going to do better. So I don't know when he, you know, had some trouble. Sounds like he's got a lot of trouble going on. I don't know what else to say.
All right. Randy, thanks for the call. 800-642-1234. We'll take some more calls in just a moment. We're going to take a break, and we'll continue our conversation with the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO's Stephanie Bloomingdale about the state of organized labor. And we want to hear from you. If you're in a labor union, how do you think things are going? What's the greatest challenge facing unions today? And how would you like to see union leaders respond? If you're not in a union, would you like to be in one, or do you think the idea of labor unions is outmoded? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email your question or comment to talk@WPR.org or post it to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. We're continuing our Labor Day tradition of talking about the state of organized labor in the Wisconsin, or in Wisconsin, with State AFL-CIO Secretary Treasurer Stephanie Bloomingdale. 800-642-1234, the number to call. 800-642-1234. Stephanie, since Act 10 was enacted more than 5 years ago, union membership in Wisconsin has dropped precipitously. Tens of thousands of members lost. Now the state has a smaller percentage of union members than the national average. How concerning are those statistics to you?
These statistics are concerning, and as you know, we suffered pretty big kick from Scott Walker and his allies who pushed through this bill that took away collective bargaining rights for public sector workers and teachers in Wisconsin. So, and not only did the workers themselves suffer, but their families and their local economies because of the loss in wages that they suffered. Also, the people that they serve have suffered greatly. And that is one of the reasons that we are working so hard to make sure that we can change this around in terms of taking back our state Senate, taking back our state assembly. Right now, the way that these districts are drawn and the state assembly are very unfair and quite possibly unconstitutional. We believe that they're unconstitutionally drawn. There is a court case going through right now that we hope will right these wrongs that the GOP majority put through really in a power-grabbing kind of way. And so as we continue on, we know that people in Wisconsin believe in fairness. They believe in with family values that support good work and collective bargaining. And we believe that with the hard work and with focus, that we will regain the right for every worker, no matter where they work, to bargain, come together and bargain for contracts in their workplace.
Well, given those declining numbers, how's that going to affect the elections this fall? I mean, not just the presidential election, but in state legislative races.
That's a good question. And in terms of our program is very strong, and we have people that are more motivated now than really ever before, because people for a long time didn't really think that it could happen here in Wisconsin. Okay, people thought, oh, we have this great state where we were the first to come up with overtime or the first to come up with unemployment protections, the first to come up with worker compensation, the birthplace of collective bargaining for public sector unions. People didn't believe it could happen here, and now they know that it can, and they see the connection between what happens at the ballot box and what happens in their own homes and their own lives, and that is what is motivating people to join our program, to get out on the doors, knocking on doors, talking to people on the phones, and talking to people in workplaces in an organized fashion to make sure that we can achieve wins in November.
So how powerful a political force are unions today?
When it comes down to who decides the elections, if you look at the numbers, it's union members who often make the difference between winning or losing for different candidates. And because our union membership, really, we punch above our weight. And so our membership does not necessarily imply what our overall vote totals are. So that is something that's very important. And politicians understand that, and they know how important the union vote is and organized labor's vote is to the overall win. Now, I'm going to be straight with you that we've got a lot of work to do. Clearly, there is more to do. We have work to do around issues that are so important in terms of infrastructure. We have roads and bridges that are crumbling. We have transportation systems that are outmoded. We have a water system that is threatened to be privatized and to put into the hands of for-profits. We know that we don't want to see a situation in Wisconsin like we saw in Flint. We need to make sure that infrastructure is looked after and recreated by the working men and women that can restore those laterals and make sure that our drinking water is safe for our kids and ourselves. We know that we need to work for $15 an hour, minimum. That's minimum. And one of the things that we are happy about, and I should mention that Labor Secretary Tom Perez is going to be here today at Labor Fest in Milwaukee, And something our people should know about is the overtime laws, the new overtime laws that went into that are going to go into effect on January 1st. And that is something that Labor Secretary Tom Perez worked with President Obama to implement. And so that is going to protect a whole lot of workers in terms of getting overtime that didn't have it before. So the platform goes up to $47,000 a year for a salaried worker. Anybody who makes below that is going to be able to have overtime for any hours worked after 40 hours a week. And in addition, we need to work on this gig economy, making sure that workers, no matter where they work, if they work for Uber or if they work for one of these services out there, that they have some basic protections afforded to everyone else. And the idea of these unpredictable work hours, we talked about this a little bit before, but we need to make sure that people have an idea of when they're going to work so that they can plan for their lives, for their rent, for their mortgage payments, for their putting food on the table. And too many employers are really taking advantage of workers in terms of their unflexible work hours. So there's a lot to be done, and there's a lot to be done out there, John.
Let's take another call. This time it'll be Cody in Oshkosh. Cody, hello. Welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Thank you. I had an answer for a previous caller who said, why did people leave the unions? I'm a state worker. And what happened was first we got hit with much lower wages, especially the people at the bottom end. We had bargained away all our wage increases for benefits. And then they said, oh, your benefits are too good, so we're going to take those away. When you make $100,000 a year, $250 a month might not be that much. But when you make $12 an hour, that it hits you pretty hard. So then he takes away the infrastructure that collects your union dues. Now everybody has to send in a separate check. Pretty soon when Joe's not going to do it, then the next guy's not going to do it, and it does kind of fall apart. And I wanted to make two other quick comments. It isn't just a check on balance between workers and management. It's a check on power of corporate power, which has no loyalty to this country. They could be transnational companies that move their workers out of this country or from state to state and work us all against. Unions are people in a specific location. We can't move around. We can't go to Taiwan and work. We have to work where we are. So unions fight for good paying, long-term employment in a specific area. Thank you.
All right, Cody, thanks for the call. What about Cody's point, Stephanie?
Cody's point is a very good point, that Scott Walker's Act 10 really did a number on dismantling a lot of different parts of people's ability to come together in the public sector unions. And so that is true. And to his second point, in terms of that unions are about a check about management power, but also all of us coming together is a check on corporate power. Because we really need to think about these bad actors out there, and some of them are bad actors, some of them are very good actors. But to those who are bad actors, who have no loyalty to country or community, they need to take a different look at where they stand. Because we want the people that are owning factories and companies to be thinking about the communities where they are. And that means staying put. That means making sure that people in the United States have the ability to have good wages and working conditions. And also, like I stated before, to really, with any of these trade deals, to level the playing fields across borders. Because when workers in Bangladesh are making a very, very low wage, they cannot possibly bid for jobs in the same way that American workers are. And we need to level the playing field so that workers aren't pitted against one another.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the future of organized labor. What do you make of the increase we're seeing in employee-owned, union-organized businesses and factories? A couple of examples. Hy-Vee Foods. There are a number of other employee-owned grocery chains. Republic Windows and Doors. There was a recent story in a Chicago paper about that company. It's employee-owned. It was shut down by its corporate owners. The employees bought it and are running it. and they still have their union. What do you see this as maybe being the future of organized labor? Hey, let's just have our own factories.
I think that that is an option out there for people, and the story for Republic Windows and Doors was really fascinating because the corporation was going to shut that down and move operations overseas, and the employees came together and said, you know what, we're gonna take over this company, and we're going to run it ourselves, and that is something that they did. So for workers that have that option, they should pursue it. And for those that don't, that work for as an employee, as most people do, work for a living, it is about coming together, that power that people have by coming together with each other in the workplace and supporting each other, just like a team, just like a group that is strong to have each other's backs and go to, you know, the bargaining table to negotiate for wages that are better, for family leave that supports both men and women to have newborn babies and make sure that they have the time to spend with them. Contracts that support affordable insurance, not insurance that has these huge deductibles that puts people into medical debt. We are seeing far too many people suffering from medical debt that is really destroying their lives. So there are so many issues that we as working people need to work on and are working on, and the next step in all this is this election coming up in November, where we are going to do everything that we can to elect Hillary Clinton and Russ Feingold at our state Senate and people that support working people up and down the ticket.
How hopeful are you that labor unions will again reach the levels of membership that they had, say, before Act 10?
Well, I am hopeful because we have seen ups and downs. If we take the long view of American history, we will see that union membership has not stayed static at any time in history. And we know that there have been ups and downs. Right now, we have great opportunities in front of us. And we know that as more and more people are feeling the pain, the economic pain that is being inflicted on them, that they will see that the answer is to come together in unions to support their families. And we know that when polls are taken, that people want to have the ability to join a union. If they don't have one now, they want to make sure that one is there for their kids if their kids need it. People don't want to see in America, people don't want to see a place where they don't have the ability to have a union.
What's in the near term? Your hope for organized labor in the year ahead as we're in the final minute of the program here.
Our hope is that more and more people come together to get out for this election on November 8th. There's a lot of work to be done to elect Hillary Clinton, to elect Russ Feingold, and to make gains in our state Senate and our state Assembly. That is going to be very, very important.
Okay.
And to talk to each other about the value of organized labor, not only today on Labor Day, but each and every day. To talk to your kids about why it's important for unions to be strong in America.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today, Stephanie.
Thank you.
That was Stephanie Bloomingdale, Secretary-Treasurer of the Wisconsin State AFL-CIO. Tomorrow at this time, it's On Your Money. We'll talk with nationally renowned personal finance expert, Gene Chatsky. That's coming up tomorrow at 8. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Brian Chasso. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.